You and I back together again, chatting on Tuesday, July 25th, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We featured a bizarre story from the White House regarding the First Family's current dog. Commuter advocate Jim Cameron joined us to chat about the possibilities of Metro North fare increases and service cuts as well. And a Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio stopped by for her weekly update. Here's a bizarre story. And this is one of these stories. Now, don't the experts say, a lot of experts will say that the kind of dog you own, not so much with cats, doesn't matter with a cat. Cat's a cat. Yeah, there are breeds of cats, but my fellow cat owners out there, right? You walk in the door. Hey, buddy, I'm home. Yeah, look, you see the food dish? Yeah, there's nothing in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that water, it's a little warm and gamey. So, yeah, you're home. Big deal. Food plate. That's a cat. And maybe I'll come and lay on your lap and lower your blood pressure later on if you feed me. And by the way, the box... not for nothing, but yeah. Come on. Those of us who loved cats and grew up with cats, we know that. But there are people who will say, and I've interviewed people on this before, that sometimes the breed of dog that you own might be a little social commentary as to what you think of people. Just saying. How about this? President Biden's nearly two-year-old German Shepherd Commander bit seven people. Good dog, not. President Biden's nearly two-year-old German Shepherd Commander bit seven people in a four-month period after his former first dog, Major, had to be taken out of the White House for similar behavior. That's according to the New York Post, who got a hold of internal Secret Service documents. Yeah, that's great. Can you imagine if this was Trump? Oh, my God. Tonight, our top story. President Trump now coming under allegations that he's intentionally trying to hurt Secret Service members. I'm telling you. But have you heard about this? Shh. In a most serious documented incident involving Commander, the White House Physician's Office on November 3rd of last year referred a bitten Secret Service uniformed officer to a local hospital for treatment after the dog clamped down on their arm and thigh. That's according to emails released under a Freedom of Information Act granted to conservative legal group Judicial Watch. Records show that Commander broke the skin of a different Secret Service member's hand and arm weeks later. Not for nothing, folks. They're lucky that the agent didn't shoot the dog. I mean, those guys are all armed. They've got sidearms. I would have shot the thing. You're biting my hand, biting my arm, biting my leg. Sorry. Mr. President, with all due respect, sorry. Broke the skin of a different Secret Service member's hand and arm weeks later after the president unleashed him outside the White House following a family movie night. And the following month, Commander bit the back of a security technician at the Biden's Wilmington, Delaware home. Now, assuming these reports are true. Let me preface that. What in the hell are they thinking? Why, seriously. Now, let's assume this is true. Now, nobody's refuted it yet, and I'm seeing it being covered on a couple of the news channels. What is up? And this is my official, this is my original point. What's up with Joe Biden and the angry German Shepherds? How about a, Mr. President, sir, with all due respect, how about a beagle? You ever had, yeah, we don't need that. How about a beagle, Mr. President? You know, beagles, they've never licked anyone to death. How about a beagle? How about a minpin? They're nice. They're tiny German Shepherds. And if they get in the way, you could kick one. Relax. Don't start calling my boss and say, you know, your afternoon host is advocating kicking dogs. No, I'm not. So what is it going on? And if you don't believe me, folks, you can read this stuff yourself. What is it with the Bidens and German Shepherds, two of them, that like to bite people? Well, you know, Paul, they're rescue dogs. Yeah, all the more reason. What is he doing? Jeez. Good Lord. Mr. Biden has reported, how about this? The president has reportedly expressed doubts about the honesty of a Secret Service member who reported being bitten on the leg by his prior dog Major, also a German Shepherd. Oh, man. this is great. You can't make this up. You can't make this up. In one encounter, a Secret Service officer was seated at the bottom of a stairwell in the White House. Commander came down the stairs and walked toward them, according to an interagency memo. The dog, unprovoked, bit the officer's arm on the tricep area, and when the officer stood up, chomped down on the quad muscle area in their leg. Another officer wrote that the attack victim reported a considerable amount of pain and said they were forced to use a steel cart to shield against a further attack. Folks, I got to tell you something. I don't care how much I love my dogs. If I'm the president of the United States of America, now let's assume this is all true. All right? Now, these came through FOI requests. Let's assume this is true. How do you keep those dogs? Unless you're nuts. Seriously, I hate to say that. How do you keep those dogs? Now, let's see what the White House response is to this. But like I said, assuming this is true, and you have Secret Service men and women around you whose job it is to possibly lay down their lives. How do you do that? I don't know. How do you do that? Think about that. Now, again, these are, you know, reports here supposedly through FOI requests. But again, imagine if this was under the Trump White House. Oh, my God. The White House did. I'm sorry. It's just this is so patently obvious. Just get rid of the dogs. Oh, you shouldn't do that, Paul. You've got German Shepherds biting Secret Service members. Please. The White House blamed the incidents. Get this. And again, I simply ask, what if this was Trump? But now, don't say anything. The White House is blaming the incidents on what it calls a unique and often stressful environment for family pets. Oh, jeez. Are they serious? Did you ever hear of the Clintons had a cat. Remember Socks the cat? Had its run of the White House, they said. Get a cat, Mr. and Mrs. Biden. Get a cat. Get a freaking cat. The Obamas had Bo, right? Bo was a poodle, I think, or a poodle mix or something. I don't think Bo was biting the people that are supposed to protect you. The first family is working through ways to make the situation better for everyone. Here's how you do it. Ma'am and sir, get rid of the dogs. Let us shift gears here and talk transportation. A lot to talk about, some summer rail activities, but everybody wondering, as I often muse about on this program, what is up with Metro North, service cuts, the fares, all of that. We present to you once again the gentleman we have on all the time, our traffic and commuting and rail guru, Jim Cameron. Check out his Talking Transportation columns in the Connecticut Mirror and other outlets. Mr. Cameron, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Dr. Pacelli, how are you? I'm just fine, sir.
You don't mind me calling you a commuting guru. Is that okay?
And a guru would be fine. I don't have a mantra aside from, you know, just breathe deeply. The train will show up eventually.
Yeah. Eventually. And they'll eventually open the doors when it's 8 degrees outside and you're waiting.
That's
to
right.
Get in. So let's talk about the trains, Mr. Cameron. We've been hearing all about hey, what's going to happen with service cuts? And the governor's out there saying, well, look at Monday and Friday. There's nobody on the train. Jim, what have you been hearing on this?
Well, I mean, this was kind of a done deal when the budget got passed. The legislature took the lead from the DOT, which basically said we can save money by reducing service. They claim only on the days when ridership is lowest, Fridays and Mondays. But they have not dropped the other shoe and held public hearings or announced exactly how they're going to accomplish these service cuts. But now they're kind of mumbling sometime maybe in October or so, we'll see a reduction in service on Metro North in Connecticut.
What kind of hearings, Jim, might we have on this? Would you and I be able to go there either in person or log in on Zoom? And if they do the hearings, is this all just a dog and pony show here?
Ah, yes. They're called the Service and Fair Equity Analysis Hearings. This is the state's effort to give an appearance of caring what the public thinks on these issues. So those hearings will probably be held in September. Again, no dates or locations announced, whether they'll be in person or hybrid. They'll probably take comments by email as well, too. But I call this political theater. If the budget is what the budget is, the service cuts are inevitable. So they're going to go through the process of hearing from angry commuters, and I've been to these things for 20 years, these sort of hearings, you know. People are angry, they're mad, it's like they come with their pitchforks and their torches, and they say, you know, I'm never going to ride the train again, I was getting my car, don't you listen to me? And they sit there and they nod and they go, well, thank you very much for your comments, and they go forward and do what they want to do. I can't remember a public hearing where the comments from the public made any difference in the final decisions.
Jim Cameron, the guest. We like to have him on at least once a month to talk a little transportation. His column's Talking Transportation. Check it out primarily in the Connecticut Mirror and other spots as well. So, Jim, along with the anticipated, I guess we would say, service reductions, perhaps on Monday, perhaps on Friday, perhaps Mondays and Fridays coming from Metro North, what about the fare structure? Increases? Yes? No? What's your gut feeling about that, and what have you heard, if anything?
Well, the fares are going up, Paul. New York announced a fare increase of about 4.5% for Metro North in New York, in Westchester, for example. But fares in Connecticut are set by the DOT. They're not set by Metro North. So one of these things that will be announced in these hearings in September we're going to reduce service, and we're also going to raise the fares. So I don't know what else they could do to make things miserable for commuters. Maybe to turn off the air conditioning in the summer and the heat in the winter, but they haven't announced they're going to do that. So, yeah, I'm predicting there's going to be a fare increase, probably in that same range. Again, looking at the history of all this, both Connecticut and New York have always raised fares in lockstep, sometimes Connecticut first, followed by New York. In this case, New York first, followed by Connecticut. And again, that'll probably start sometime in October or so.
So, Jim, I mean, is there any wiggle room here? I know you said the budget is set. There's a hard number there. But, you know, supposing, and maybe this won't happen, but what happens if, you know, some of those Monday and Friday trains, they're going to be more heavily ridden because there's fewer trains. Is there any way if the passenger ridership on the trains gets to a point, they'll say, okay, we'll add one or two more trains, or is that not known?
Well, I mean, anything is possible. And the expectation is that maybe after Labor Day, more employers in New York City will start telling their employees, you got to come back in the office more than the 2 or 3 days a week that you're doing it now. Maybe the ridership will come back. If ridership comes back, that will mean more revenue. Maybe that will make an argument that they should be adding more service. But in the meantime, as my followers on social media have been pointing out, the trains are getting pretty full now. But we did get a little bit spoiled, if you can say that, during COVID. when the ridership was so light. Even the pictures that people send me of what they think are standing room only conditions on the trains still show a lot of empty seats.
Yeah.
Yes, those middle seats on the three-seat side, nobody wants to sit in the middle seat. It's a little cramped, but you know, the railroad looked at that and said, look, there's empty seats. If people choose to stand instead of sitting in an empty seat, that's on them.
Jim, you and I, and by the way, Jim Cameron is the guest. Check out his columns, ConnecticutMirror.org and other spots. Jim, you and I are both participating in this study to maybe take a look at what the numbers would be if Connecticut commuters were paying a mileage tax, so much, a penny, penny and a half, 2 cents a mile, whatever, as other states have done. What's your experience with you being one of the folks that is trying this out for the state?
Well, the Connecticut DOT is not doing this trial. It's being done by a third party. Mm-hmm. The Eastern States, I'll find a name for you here. I think it's the Eastern States, some consortium that's doing the study. And it just happens that the chairman of this third party group is also the commissioner of the DOT in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So put the pieces together there. But so far, my experience has been very favorable. I signed up for the trial. They sent me a little fob, so to speak, that I plug into my car, and it keeps track of my mileage. And they give me a report every month on how many miles I drove, how much gas tax I paid based on the kind of car I drive, and what the vehicle miles tax would be if it was just a flat rate based on the mileage. And so far, I would save money if I went to the vehicle miles tax, because I drive a hybrid Prius, which means that my use of gasoline is much less than if I drove a Hummer or some, you know, huge gas guzzling vehicle on Connecticut roads. So I'm curious to see how this all works out. But this seems to be the wave of the future. Many progressive states, many countries in Europe do this already. They don't charge the gasoline tax anymore. They just charge based on the number of miles that you drive.
And, Jim, a lot of that has to do, and people know I'm participating in the same study. Now, my fob is not GPS controlled, so I don't get the intermittent mileage reports. I'll get something at the end. But, Jim, there are fewer and fewer gasoline-using and, as you say, guzzling vehicles out there. But, again, you and I have talked about this for years now. You know, people may say, okay, but I don't trust them to lower or devalue the gasoline tax. And if we ever got, Jim, you know, that's sort of a relative promise from our wonderful men and women with Hartford in Hartford, I think more people would be amenable to this.
Well, that's all the more reason to get up close and personal with your state representative and your state senator while you're sending them a note or giving them a call about the fare increase coming on Metro North and the service reductions. You might also opine and bloviate on your opinions of a vehicle miles tax. These people in Hartford you refer to are our elected officials. I think we sent them to the legislature to represent our interests. And yes, I think that the you know, the future of the gasoline tax is not very bright if the conversion is happening at the rate that we see to electric vehicles. Anybody who's driving an all-electric vehicle right now, a Tesla, for example, is paying nothing to drive on our highways because they're not paying for gasoline. They're not paying a gasoline tax. They're causing wear and tear and traffic congestion on our highways. And there are no tolls. So they get a free ride. Is that fair? I don't think so.
And Jim, finally, before we let you go, let's end on an up note here. Your latest column, A Summer of Rail Adventures. What might that be about?
Well, you know, Connecticut is blessed with any number of great trolley and rail museums. The Danbury Rail Museum, the Shoreline Rail Trolley Museum. In Brantford, I believe it is. There's another one in upstate Connecticut on your way up 91. There's a great railroad museum, part of the Naugatuck Railroad. And they all have some sort of a collection of old rail cars. Many of them offer train rides as well, too. And if you're looking for something to do with the kids and give them a taste of what, you know, railroads used to be like when they really were the means of getting around, mm-hmm. I would seriously suggest a little day trip to one of these railroad museums. And they're all run by volunteers. And as I said in my column, I said, if you express even the slightest interest to the docents that are there and explaining how the trains operate, they will be very appreciative and tell you more than you'd ever want to know about railroading in Connecticut.
Jim Cameron, as always, great to talk with you. Jim, take care, and we'll check in with you next month. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Sir Paul.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Jim Cameron there. Check it out. Connecticut Mirror, ctmirror.org. The recent column there, Summer of Rail Adventures. It being Tuesday, our Tuesday 5 o'clock spotlight now goes to Megan Portfolio, blogger extraordinaire, the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. Check out the Hartford Portfolio at yankeeinstitute.org. And Megan is here joining us once again this afternoon. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. I'm doing all right. Enjoying the heat.
Yeah, well, somebody has to, right? I'll stay in front of my refrigerator, but that's fine. If you like the heat, that's all good. Hey, listen, you wrote about something, about a proposal, Megan, that was defeated during the legislative session. Nobody really knows why. There were some shenanigans at the end. But now you say you're a little concerned about what might happen wrapped up in the good intentions thing here. So what's going on?
Government's up to their dirty tricks again.
Mm-hmm.
So during the last session, there was a very popular bill. It was bipartisan, a lot of support from both sides of the aisle. Basically, it would just allow businesses to band together to get health insurance. They call it the association health insurance plan. Mm-hmm. It's just to help cut down costs of insurance. And it didn't make it across the finish line, but it's something that the businesses really want. So word on the street is, thanks to Mark Fitch from Connecticut Inside Investigator, they want to call a special session in the fall to bring this back. Sounds good, right?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, but this
yeah,
is...
Yeah, but what now what's going on here? Because I guess, Megan, people are like, oh, yeah, so the auto body shops and the hairdressers and all these associations could get together in numbers and look for discounted health insurance. What could be wrong with that?
Well, they want to sneak in the bill something that was very unpopular with the business community, and that was a mandate that all employers in the state provide mandatory sick leave, paid sick leave. Now, it got proposed a few different ways this session. One bill called for 40 hours and there was 80 hours. The governor had a proposal to mandate it on employers that had 11 and more employees. So not really sure which way they want to go with it because the bill hasn't been written yet, but it is very, very unpopular with the business community.
So this is known, Megan, in Hartford parlance as a rat. In other words, this is what the General Assembly tends to do when they know there is something that may very well, right, get passed with good intentions, and this becomes an oh-by-the-way thing here.
Yeah, I mean, since the bill's so popular, I don't have a crystal ball, but there's really no way it would fail if they were to call a session. So certain groups, I don't really know who they were. We can only speculate. But certain groups are thinking, hey, we can't get this across the finish line the right way. Let's put it in this popular bill. We'll sneak it in and then we'll get it. And it's just disingenuous. And it's really sad. And it's something that shouldn't happen in this day and age.
So what are the, have you heard anything? What are the prospects here? I mean, can't they just wait on this till the short session next year, which traditionally happens in the even years when all the warm, fuzzy stuff happens, or not?
They could, and they should, and they should have its own bill, just like they did last session, and, you know, let the process roll out, but they don't want to do it that way because it's not going to pass. We do actually have a mandate for paid sick leave, mm-hmm. and it's for most companies with 50 or more employees. and it was enacted in, I think, 2012. Mm-hmm. And the CBIA actually testified this year against it, saying that when it was originally enacted, many businesses saw an increase in cost of 2 to 5%. And because of that, they had to cut hours and benefits just to make up for that cost. Now, just imagine like a small mom and pop shop with maybe one or two employees with this mandate. It's just going to require them to do, they're already working like 6-7 days a week. And mm-hmm. now they're going to have to keep track of it. They're going to have to report it to Department of Labor. It's just a lot of work for them. And it's not right to do this to them. Because a lot of these small businesses, you know, they treat their employees like family. So they're already allowing them to have this time off.
And again, Megan, we're talking with Megan Portfolio from the Yankee Institute. Check out the Hartford Portfolio column that she publishes on a regular basis. Again, and you're right, there's a balance here. But again, we see CNBC came out with their ratings about a week and change ago, that Connecticut still, Megan, struggles with businesses, you know, being able to be what is phrased or called, right, business friendly. And some bosses, not everybody, but some bosses, they point to these sorts of policies and say, well, I can't, you know, I want to treat my employees well, but I can't go along with this.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. You go to like a little pizza shop or a little deli. Mm-hmm. You see, you know the owners. You go there. I mean, I go to my local, you know, sandwich place maybe once a week, and I know the owner, and I see them. They're there every day. And then to require them and to add more regulations on them, impose more costs on them when they're already struggling, they still haven't recovered from COVID. We have over 100,000 jobs open in the state. It's just not the right time. It's never the right time for this, but it's really not the right time for this.
All right, check out the piece, folks. It's at YankeeInstitute.com. We're getting bamboozled again, says Megan Portfolio, and check out the Hartford Portfolio bookmark it on a regular basis. Megan, thanks, and we'll be in touch with you next Tuesday. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Have a great week.
All right, thank you. Megan Portfolio here. We're getting bamboozled again. And again, what is happening here is, and this happens all too often in the state when there's a controversial bill that probably won't pass, so it gets stuck in some sort of implementer bill or some other bill that's really got nothing to do with it. And they're trying to do this. Now, again, if you want to debate and have a vigorous, boisterous debate, yelling and screaming at each other, or being perfectly gentle about whether or not every business in the state should offer paid sick leave, you can have that. Maybe that's a good idea. But don't have a what they call a rat inserted somewhere in another bill to kind of piggyback something onto it and do it on the QT. And again, what Megan explained here, in case you just came in or don't quite get it, is the bill to possibly mandate paid sick leave would be attached onto as an amendment of a very popular bill that was killed. Remember we talked about this a couple of months ago? It would have made legal association health plans in this state. So in other words, commercial groups, business groups, trade associations, they could go to the big insurance companies and say, hey, we have 400 members in the Auto Body Association of Connecticut. What can you do us on a rate on health care? Well, that got bamboozled at the last minute, mainly by the people, or allegedly, I shouldn't say mainly, let me be fair here, allegedly by the people that run the state's Obamacare Health Exchange, because they felt that those associations would draw too many people away from the Obamacare pool and drive costs up, even though, as usual, you get people on the left and right who actually agree on something, but no, we can't have that.